This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union, with 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. There are now more ways to stay in touch with us. Check out the website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you have any comments about our show or would like us to promote a community event, please drop us a line at stateofthe.union@dc37.net. We begin our show by welcoming a woman who Wikipedia says is an American civil rights activist, feminist, and political strategist who has been frequently cited for her effective activism in progressive causes. During her student years, she was committed to both the civil rights movement and feminist causes. Since then, she has devoted her career to feminism, community organization, and progressive politics. I'm talking about Heather Booth, who a writer, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist named David Wood, wrote, "Inside almost every liberal drive over the past five decades for fair pay, equal justice, workers' rights, voters' rights, civil rights, immigration rights, child care, you will find Heather Booth. But you may have to look hard, because she's not always at the head of the protest march. More often, she's at a Let's Get Organized meeting in a suburban church basement, or a late-night strategy session in a crumbling neighborhood's community center. She's helping people already roused to action figure out practical ways to move their cause forward, and always she's advancing the credo she learned as a child, that you must not only treat people with dignity and respect, but you must shoulder your own responsibility to help build a society that reflects those values." Welcome to State of the Union, Heather Booth.
Well, what a wonderful introduction. Chris, you are so terrific. And AFSCME is such a leader in making this a better world. DC 37 is such a proud history. You really do carry out the Frederick Douglass, the great abolitionist, saying that without struggle, there is no progress. And AFSCME is usually in the forefront of the most important struggles of the day. So thanks very much for having me on.
I think it's so important. We've been trying to talk to people, some of the smartest, most experienced people we know, about putting the current time that we're in. You know, I spend a lot of time on social media, and there are a lot of young people who are feeling as if we are in unprecedented times, facing unprecedented struggles. And while there is a unique quality to the world that we currently live in, the struggle's been going on for some time. And I just wanted to ask you to please put in, from your experience, what we're going through now into some sort of perspective.
A couple thoughts on that. I first came into the movement through the civil rights movement. And in 1964, I was in Mississippi in the Freedom Summer Project. Some of your listeners may have heard about it. It's when Northern students were encouraged to come down to Mississippi to support the incredible organizing going on at the grassroots there. And during that summer project, three of the young volunteers, Andrew Goodman, James Cheney, and Michael Schwerner, were killed at the hands of the Klan. And that story went around the country, and many heard about it. But what they may not have heard about was that while they were looking for the bodies of those three young men, they found bodies of other black men whose hands had been bound or feet chopped off. And those disappearances hadn't even been reported. And when they found the bodies, they weren't investigated except many years later as cold cases. I mention it because that was a time when black lives did not matter in Mississippi. It was a time of great hardship. People lived in terror. And if you compare the times that we're in to those times were certainly even worse in so many ways. And yet, because people organized, because they did the work every day, within a year, there was a Voting Rights Act. And Mississippi now has more African-American elected officials than any other state in the country. And the head of SNCC at that time, John Lewis, is now a congressman and was just recently at the Academy Award.
Right.
So you make progress when you organize, but only when you organize. And so people in these times should remember we have faced terrible hardships in the past. AFSCME certainly knows that. But that when we organize, we make progress.
And how did you come to the experience? Was it as simple as you were reading the news and you said to yourself, something's got I have to be part of this? When you talk about your early experiences with the civil rights movement?
Well, many things led me to Mississippi and lead me to continue this work. One is I was brought up in a family that believed that we should treat everyone with dignity and respect. I was brought up with love in my family and believing that we should love each other. We should hate injustice and hate oppression, but have love at the center of our hearts. And then I was recruited. Someone came to my campus and said, here's a tragedy, people living in terror, and you can do something about it. Here's a program, a way to be involved. And that's what we also need to do, to see the opportunity, even in these moments of incredible challenge, and talk to people, engage them, and with love in our hearts for others and hatred of oppression, recruit others, do that organizing work. In fact, Chris, sometimes the moments of greatest challenge are the moments of greatest progress. And as difficult as these times are, I also find them amongst the most inspiring times in a long time because so many people are coming out, are looking for a new way to make change, to stop the release of hatred that we see all around us and the pushback on so many rights and abilities that we've won over these last years. There's so much pushback that it's actually inspiring many to come out, take to the streets, and it's up to us to move them into organization.
Have the tactics or the process by which that is done, the organizing process, has that changed over time in the past, 20, 30, 40 years?
Well, some things have certainly changed. There's an online world. I remember in organizing when we not only did we only have landline phones without cameras on them, but also you had to type on a typewriter and then correct it with a white corrector. We didn't have computers, and so there are many things that have changed on the technology and our understanding. The testing out of what actually works. Sometimes our gut is really good, and sometimes we actually have to test it out and make sure we're not just following our own biases or expectations. So there are enormous changes that allow the organizing to go faster, the news to spread faster, broader, wider. But there also are some fundamentals that haven't changed. I do think at the heart of loving people and hating injustice, of knowing that we need to talk to people, both in groups, but also one at a time, one-on-one. We need to build a relationship, show people we care about them. We need to listen more than talk and understand their interests and then show that together we have the power to make change. And I think those fundamentals, building relationships, understanding other people's interests, and together, based on our values, building the power to actually change this world, those are fundamentals. And AFSCME certainly lives, has learned, and passes on those lessons.
Well, Lee Saunders, the president of AFSCME, talks constantly about the need to get back to basics, and that in the world of social media, we sometimes mistake a like or a share with action. And that is not, it is not action until you've actually touched somebody for real and looked a person in the eye.
One of the wonderful things about President Saunders is that he's been an organizer. He knows what it takes, and he gives both the inspiration and he does the work.
Right, right. We have a couple of minutes left. We're talking with Heather Booth. We're talking about the times we're in. And your late husband, Paul Booth, speaking of love, was a beloved person within the world of AFSCME, within the world of progressive politics. And what always struck me about Paul was that he had great passion, but he also had great joy. He enjoyed the as discouraging and as frustrating, especially in the last couple of years, last few years with the attack on unions. He never lost a sense. He never lost his sense of joy.
Well, Paul loved AFSCME. In many ways, we talked about it as his second family. Of course, we love our own family,
right,
with our two grown kids, five grandkids, the joys of our lives. But AFSCME was also a joy of Paul's life and of our life. We try and carry it on in the public service. You know, Paul and I met at a sit-in. It was a sit-in against the war in Vietnam. And we were partners in this struggle for justice, for union rights, for civil rights, for the rights of all people. And AFSCME was at the heart of it. And Paul continued his work from, he was a leader in the student movement nationally, one of the most prominent leaders. He then worked on consumer issues in Chicago, where we lived, as head of a very dynamic community-based organization. And then he made his way to AFSCME, and ending up not only leading in Illinois, where they have a great union in Illinois also, but then in the field department, and then as the assistant to the president for Jerry McEntee, and then for President Saunders.
And he is missed. He is missed.
Well, I thank AFSCME for the joy that it brought into our lives and into the lives of so many others, raising up people's standard of living and hopes and values. And hopefully together we'll get through this challenging period and into a better one for real democracy and justice in the AFSCME way.
Heather Booth, thank you very much for joining us. I knew this was going to go by way too quickly, and it did. And I hope that you'll come back and talk with us some more in the future.
Thanks very much for having me on, Chris, and thanks to AFSCME for your leadership.
We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE-FM. Brandon Weber writes about economics, labor union history, and working people. And he is the author of Class War USA, Dispatches from Workers' Struggles in American History, from Haymarket Books. He's written for The Progressive, for Upworthy, Big Think, and many other online publications. He's also been a union activist for more than 30 years. Welcome to State of the Union, Brandon.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
You know, I was reading Class War USA, and I was really, you know, we've been trying to accomplish something on this show, which is talking to listeners about, especially young folks, about the history of the struggles. You know, one of the expressions is the struggle continues. The struggle has always continued. And trying to put the current times into perspective. And boy, this book really helps do that in a very accessible way, because you're telling different stories and you're not doing 400 pages on a particular struggle. You're showing the range of things that have been happening going back, you know, a couple hundred years.
Yeah, the fact is, the history of the labor movement is filled with stories like the ones that are in this book. And you know, when I grew up in grade school and high school, they taught us that history was made by wealthy white people, white guys, usually white men. You know, this rich white guy did this, this rich white guy did that, and that's how we got everything that we have in the world. And we did the work. We created all of that wealth for people, working people did. And so a number of the stories that I have in the book, I actually originally created for social media, and they went pretty big. Got a lot of eyes on those, and so that got me thinking. This was actually way before the 2016 election. Got me thinking about putting that into a, you know, kind of summarizing the struggle of what working people have been through down through history. And mind you, there's another, I mean, I think there's almost 30 stories about that in this book, and there's another couple hundred we could tell, right?
Right, so, absolutely.
But I was inspired, well, as the election happened, and we know what happened since then, I decided this was a good time to talk about the fight back and the fact that we have been up against the wall before at times in history, and working people got together, and they fought back, and they won, even if it took 5-10 years. Sometimes these were some battles that actually didn't end up so well initially, but then they won eventually.
And
yeah, that's kind of the spirit.
And some of those, tragically, many of those battles were bloody.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, Ludlow is a good example in Ludlow, Colorado, the mining country out there. I mean, what ended up happening after the workers were on strike for several months, they set up tent camps because, of course, they were thrown out of the company towns that they lived in. And, the company thugs went and shot through the tents, set them on fire, killed a number of people. You know, these things have happened. They've happened through history. It's amazing to me that when those things did happen during the time, I mean, these were the real struggles of working people. If 14 people died on a picket line in New York City tomorrow, that would be huge news, right?
Right.
But this was commonplace back then.
Right. Right. You know, and some of it, you know, much of it was interesting to me because I was not aware. I was aware of some level, for example, about the Pullman porters, but I had no idea that African-American women called a general strike in 1881. And you describe it, you know, very succinctly in your book. And let's talk a little bit about that and any other story that you want to tell from the
sure.
book. What was the Atlanta washerwoman strike about?
So, I mean, they at that time in the United States, the very first thing that anybody would get would be a washing service, because we didn't have washing machines. We didn't have any of the technology we do today to wash our own clothes. So the very first thing you would do if a family had any money at all was to hire someone to do their washing. And, of course, at that time, very, very soon after the Civil War, the people that were doing it were almost entirely African-American women. And so they would do the washing. And down in Atlanta, at some point, they got fed up with their conditions and the wages. And I mean, they worked hard for their money. And at some point, they got fed up and the local government said, basically, tough, you know, live with it. We don't care. We don't care about your plight. And they said, they sent a letter actually to the mayor saying, basically, look, you're going to double our wages or there will be no washing. You will not have clean clothes. And guess what? They won. They won.
Amazing, right?
Yes. Very, very cool. Especially again, so soon after the Civil War. Yeah.
And also you want to talk about the Triangle fire.
Yeah. So 1911, it was actually March 25th. So the anniversary is coming up. 143 people perished. I think that's the number. Perished that day, almost entirely women, almost entirely immigrant women, and a number of them under the age of 18, child labor, basically. And it was one of those factories where in New York where it was absolutely sweatshop conditions. And a fire broke out pretty quickly, engulfed the place in flames. And they actually, this is just like we've, just like recently happened overseas in India.
Right.
The doors were locked, so they could not escape. The elevators stopped working. The fire escape broke while they tried to get out the fire escape. You know, the only people, very few people escaped from the roof by going all the way to the roof and jumping to the surrounding buildings. And some of those people were actually the owners of the place. And in fact, oh, this is the crazy story about that is, if you look at it later, the people who died, I mean, this ended up with 80,000 people walking down the streets of New York in protest of conditions like this, because this wasn't unique. This was not a unique situation. It was happening all over the place. So 80,000 people marched in protest 10 days later. That actually ended up being 350,000 people who marched in the funeral procession for all these people, which is incredible. I mean, imagine that today, right? Imagine those kind of numbers turning out for something like that. And then a really cool sub-story of that is that Frances Perkins, who was an inspector of buildings and such, she came, I think, the next day or the same day to inspect what happened. She ended up being appointed by FDR's administration to head the Department of Labor, and the first woman to be in a cabinet. And she took the lessons of that with her. And when the National Labor Relations Act was enacted in 1934, she applied some of that knowledge of what happened to helping draft that legislation so that people, you know, for example, so that working people could walk out if there was unsafe working conditions, that kind of thing.
We're talking with Brandon Weber about his book, Class War USA, Dispatches from Workers' Struggles in American History. When you write a book like this, what are you hoping to accomplish?
I think, you know, the fight back spirit of this, of when unions and working people got together and said, we're not going to take this anymore, that's what I was hoping to capture with this. In addition to, again, you know, stories about working people are rarely told. And so I wanted to get that out there in the world and help people understand what kind of struggles we've gone through and what it takes sometimes to win. I mean, we are in a time when unions are under attack. We have been in several points in the past, but this has been pretty extreme. This is pretty severe that we're under right now. And I'm not certain it's going to get any better without a lot of these kinds of struggles. In fact, I'm sure of it. It's not going to get better without us fighting. And I don't believe it's going to mean fighting in the streets. But guess what? There were times in our history when that's exactly what had to happen.
I was Joe Hill, the story of Joe Hill and the role that music played in the movement was no small thing. It brought people together and it gave people words and music to that united them.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, Joe Hill, he was a union organizer as well as a musician and a poet. And I wanted to open the book with Joe Hill and then I closed the book with Woody Guthrie, another of labor's musicians. And so, yeah, I mean, that I think we need more of that. I mean, there's a few these days, Billy Bragg, one of them. There's a couple others out there in the world, but nothing on the scale of both of these gentlemen. And they inspired people. We'd go to a rally or strike action, and they would get people going with the music that they played. And I think we could use more of that today.
The culture in general. You know, the culture matters, and if you're in the sensibility of the culture, I think that in the last 10 years since you and I have known each other, and I think we've known each other about 10 years. We met at an AFL-CIO event, and at that time, public popularity for unions was at 43%, and it's now at 62%, which tells us. Which tells us something, right? It tells us about the importance of being in the culture and talking to people about who we are.
It does. And I think that that's, I mean, one of the reasons why younger people today, obviously, there was the Great Recession that deeply affected their financial future for the rest of their lives. That got them thinking about unions. But also, I think that there is a spirit among young people today that when they hear about these things, they go, my God, that's what we need to do right now. We need to do these things. We need to organize. We need to get people involved in union activity. And to even, I mean, look at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, younger people like that that are inspiring and that run for office and win.
There are two things I want. We've got just about a couple minutes left. The first thing is I am amazed by your Facebook following. You've got like thousands and thousands and thousands of people following you on Facebook. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And how do our members get the book?
So I don't like to there's one major supplier of books that I don't like to direct business to, and everybody knows the name because of their work policy with their workers. So Barnes & Noble, or if you want to go directly to Haymarket Books and look for the name Class War USA and with my name, Brandon Weber with 1B, that's where you can find it.
And you have a website?
I do not. I long ago abandoned the concept of websites only because it takes so much to keep them going. So my Facebook page is my primary. I've also got a Twitter following, but the Facebook page is about 680,000 fans right now. And I'm going to say a third of those are union-oriented people.
Brandon Weber is spelled with 1B. He is on Facebook talking to folks every day about the struggles working folks face. The book is called Class War USA, Dispatches from Workers' Struggles in American History. It's from Haymarket Book. Brandon Weber, thank you very much for being with us. And you can come back anytime and talk to us about anything you want.
Thank you.
And that's just about all the time we have on the show this week. I want to thank our guests, Heather Booth, and the aforementioned Mr. Weber, for joining us this evening. Before we go, we've got a couple of announcements. DC 37's Political Action Committee holds its monthly meeting on Thursday, March 14th at 6 p.m. at Union Headquarters. For details, call 212-815-1550. March is Women's History Month. DC 37 celebrates it with the second annual Women's Forum with a focus on visionary women, champions of peace and nonviolence, on Friday, March 15th at 6 p.m. at Union Headquarters. If you have any comments, State of the Union at dc37.net. The producer is Rudy Orozco. Engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I am Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.